Welcome to Illinois Family Spotlight, a conversation about faith, family, freedom, the state of Illinois, our nation, and conservative action. Here's David Smith and Monty Larrick.
Thanks for making Illinois Family Spotlight part of your day. I'm Monty Larrick. Our guest is Vicki Thorne, the founder of Project Rachel, a post-abortion ministry, and she's the executive director of the National Office of Post-Abortion Reconciliation and Healing. Ms. Thorne, the keynote speaker at the Lake County Right to Life Banquet in Mundelein. Ms. Thorne, you say there is hope for women who have had an abortion. How does the healing begin?
Well, the healing really begins at the moment that she knows it's a problem. Many women spend a lot of years in denial, and they're sort of numb to the abortion issue, and something that's called a trigger incident happens, and now she knows this is a problem. And the important thing is for us to be there for her, to speak when we speak about life issues, that there's healing and there's hope. It's a process, it's not magic, and she really needs to embrace what's happened, but also to walk through forgiveness of other people, if she has a faith base, to work this out with God, to help her to grieve for the unique child that's there, because she carries cells from that child the rest of her life. This is a biological knowledge that she has. It feels kind of crazy. How would I know that? But these cells are there in our body, and they stay. And if we've had an abortion or a miscarriage, we actually have more cells from those children than our other children. Also to help her to forgive herself and to move forward in a life-affirming manner. And you know, Monty, the women that I've seen over more than 30 years, Project Rachel started in 1984, are such a gift in the healing because they've encountered forgiveness from God, they've come to peace with what they've done, and they make a difference in the world, whether they do it publicly, you know, speaking out, or whether they do it privately. Maybe they work in a crisis pregnancy center, maybe they raise money for a maternity home, maybe they take in their niece who's pregnant. But to see that healing and to see that hope comes with that is so profound.
How does Project Rachel connect with these women?
Well, Project Rachel is the official outreach of the Catholic Church in the United States, and it was one of the first ones to be formed on the kind of level it's on, all right? It's across the country. And women find us, okay? So there are ads and bulletins. There are maybe business cards. People hand out things, leave them in bathrooms, telling people there's help, you know? You can find it and take it with you. And then they would make a phone call or an email contact saying, you know, I need help. I live so-and-so. And we would find them help. And Project Rachel is designed to be one-on-one. So whatever, wherever she wants to start. She wants to start with a clergyman, we can do that. She wants to start with a therapist, we can do that.
So you do connect with churches?
Yeah. It is an official outreach of the Catholic Church in the United States.
So if a woman says she's a Protestant, evangelical, you won't turn her down?
Nope, we'll find her help. You know, we oftentimes have a list of where the pro-life pastors are of other denominations. You know, sometimes it's not a long list, I might add, you know. But we'll help her. There's no question about that. And we aren't going to evangelize her in terms of saying, well, you have to be Catholic in order to do this. We're going to walk with her.
What do you see as some of the roadblocks toward healing and hope for these post-abortive women?
Self-guilt, self-judgment, holding oneself hostage in terms of this is sort of the ultimate sin if she's got a faith language. She believes this is the big one and that God's going to punish her for it. And so many times she even kind of keeps God at a distance. She starts the dialogue, but she sort of shuts herself down because she doesn't feel worthy. And some of the other things that get in the way are things she does to try and cope. So alcohol, other sexual encounters, many times there's more than one abortion. Maybe has an abusive partner, husband. There's just many things that make themselves manifest, and she hasn't always named what the problem was. Where did this come from?
Well, you mentioned women who've had multiple abortions. Do you find it's more difficult to minister to these women? No.
Well, it's more difficult in this sense that oftentimes she remembers one clearly and the others are sort of tucked away. And it's in the unfolding of the telling of the story, that's part of it, is, you know, telling what happened, that she suddenly realizes, and I know this sounds funny, but she realizes there was more than one abortion. In our brain, we sort of segment things, and things that are traumatic, we tuck away. And so a woman, as she's unfolding this, might suddenly remember, she didn't really forget, she's didn't have it in the forefront that she had three abortions. And so each one of those needs to be resolved. And the complexity there is that, you know, they're stacked in terms of the grief, in terms of the brokenness in her life, what was going on. Women oftentimes get pregnant shortly after an abortion in an attempt. It's called a replacement pregnancy. And so it's not uncommon to end up with a multiple abortion because nothing changed in your life. You know, the boyfriend is still not a new boyfriend. Maybe it might be a new boyfriend. But we don't understand also how often the men would have liked to have said something as in, please don't, and they're told to be quiet. It's her body. But the reality is that men undergo biochemical changes all throughout pregnancy, and by 4 weeks, that's before she knows she's pregnant, her scent changes, and her partner begins the process of becoming a father biochemically.
How do you reach out to these women who feel guilt and shame without seeming like you're condoning their actions?
Well, it's pretty clear that if it's a post-abortion healing program, that it's not condoning it. Now, I will say there are a few pro-abortion, post-abortion outreaches, but that we stand with her saying this wasn't good for you, okay? But not shame on you, all right? Because she's got enough of the shame on me going on. So we're there to say, we'll walk with you. It's possible to heal this, but this was a life-offending event, and you are a mother that's lost a child in a traumatic and unnatural fashion. And that gives her some opportunity to think about what happened to her. You know, the lie in the culture, Monty, is that this is a simple procedure. It's like having a bunion removed or your ears pierced. And then women, when they begin to grieve, are so confused by that. Why do I feel like this? The doctor said this was a simple, easy procedure. The society says that. Well, because she is a mother who lost her child in a traumatic and unnatural fashion, and she carries that biological knowledge of that child, that unique child in her body, the rest of her life.
I want to talk some more about that a little later on in our conversation here. But it seems as though more women seem to be coming forward about their abortion experience, even within the churches they attend. What do you think that's happening?
I think it's happening for a couple of reasons. We're now into the second and even third generation of women who've had abortions. And let me add that abortion started long before Roe v. Wade. I know women who had abortions in World War I, World War II, and the Depression. It wasn't legal, but they were available. So this long history, and we have women like the Silent No More women who stand up publicly and say, I regret my abortion. You can go online and you can find women talking about regretting their abortions. You can go, and there's a number of books written by women talking about the chaos that came into their life after the abortion, but also the freedom that came with healing. And I think that it's becoming more and more aware of this. You know, again, healing's been going on since Project Rachel started in 1984, but we didn't have social media yet. And so it was more difficult to get the word out. Now, someone going online looking for post-abortion help, there's a multitude of things there. And if you poke around, you know, even if you're not sure where you are with this, and you begin to see what other women are saying, it gives you permission to begin the process.
Part of this healing process, you've touched on it, it's repentance, it's asking God to help you get through this,
yeah.
Right?
You know, and it's. I always tell women, if I'm working with them, you know, I invite you to say a prayer as we start this journey. And the prayer is, God, I give you permission to heal me. And because otherwise I want to be healed, but I'm not worthy. And I sometimes talk to them about the picture our grandmas had on the wall of Jesus at the door. There is no doorknob on Jesus' side. If we don't open the door, he's not forcing his way in. So when we say that prayer of it's really a prayer of surrender. It makes a big difference because I've opened my heart to God's forgiveness and to God's mercy.
This is Illinois Family Spotlight. Our guest is Vicki Thorne. We're going to continue our conversation after this.
Americans have been traveling down the health insurance highway for decades. But lately, it's been taking us to places we don't want to go. For Christians, it's hard to know which road to take. Or is it? Samaritan Ministries provides a different direction, a biblical path for their members to pray for each other and share financially in each other's medical needs.
This idea that Samaritan has adopted from the book of Acts should permeate all parts of our lives, not just health sharing. We, as a body of believers, are living out New Testament Christianity. This is what God intended for the church.
Do you believe that you need an insurance company, or do you believe that God will provide your needs? And there are people that you've never met before who are going to pray for you and meet your needs. There's another way.
Looking for a new direction for your healthcare? Visit us online at SamaritanMinistries.org.
Hi, this is Kurt Jarrus, the host of Veracity Hill. Veracity Hill is a radio podcast dedicated to striving for truth on faith, politics, and society. I don't have all the answers, but join me as I explore important topics with guests from respective fields. To learn more, text the word VERACITY to 555-888. That's V-E-R-A-C-I-T-Y to the number 555-888, or check out our website at veracityhill.com.
This is Illinois Family Spotlight. I'm Monty Larrick, and our guest is Vicki Thorne, the founder of Project Rachel, a post-abortion ministry. She's also the executive director of the National Office of Post-Abortion Reconciliation and Healing. Ms. Thorne, the keynote speaker at the Lake County Right to Life Banquet in Mundelein. Ms. Thorne, pro-abortion advocates acknowledge that, yes, abortion is a difficult decision for women, but if they have one, they can get over it, they can live with it. And they seem to downplay the shame and guilt that women will feel. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I think, you know, let's not even talk shame and guilt, let's talk grief. Because grief is oftentimes the first thing that comes up, and it catches the women by surprise. Why would I be grieving for this? It took care of a problem. And so then we can begin to help them work through the rest of it. But, you know, to be able to challenge people who say there's nothing and say, if someone's experiencing grief, are you going to deny that to them? Because that's not very compassionate. We need to meet them where they are and to help them walk through it.
You mentioned that men also experience grief in this whole process, and they're kind of overlooked in all this discussion.
Well, you know, for every woman, and we're well over 50 million abortions in this country, I mean, we don't even know how many, honestly, there's a father. And if he's with her, if this isn't just a one-night stand, then he never sees her again. If he's in her presence, by the time she's 4 weeks pregnant, she doesn't know she's pregnant yet because she hasn't missed her period. Her scent changes. These are pheromones, and they're scent molecules of affiliation. And he knows she's pregnant, and his body starts changing. And many men, we've done two conferences over the years on men and abortion, all right? These fathers hurt so bad, Monty, they would have done anything to stop that abortion. And the lie is they're all forcers. There are some forcers, and they'll have 8, 10, 12 abortions. It's a power trip with women. But many of these men wanted to be a father, you know, even if it was an accidental pregnancy. They wanted to protect. And they're told to sit down and shut up, that they're nothing but a sperm donor. Okay, what's it to you? It's her body. The reality is, well, one, it is his body, but we need to help men to be able to find ways to say it. The grief these men express, Monty, is so deep. And, you know, for some men, it comes up right away, the guys who would have done their best at the moment. Other younger men, maybe they're in college, and, it seems like a good thing to do. You know, we're not ready to get married. And then later, when he's ready to be a father or a pregnancy happens, he's devastated by who isn't here. And he hadn't really thought about it at length. But men also act out. I mean, alcohol and drugs and risk-taking behavior, and some men turn to pornography and say they'll never touch a woman again because they're so hurt.
Leads me to ask, are churches doing enough about this? Pastors are overwhelmed with this program, that program, but are they paying enough attention to post-abortive women and men?
I don't think so. Well, and you're right, because these poor guys are so overwhelmed. And the other difficulty is, how do I talk about it? Because if I'm a pastor, I know I have people sitting there who've had abortions. I don't want to hurt them with my preaching. And so I don't know how to talk about it. And I always say to pastors, you know, if you're going to talk about it, you talk about the wounded people. You talk about the mothers and the fathers and the grandparents and the siblings, all of them, and how they're hurt by this and the grief that comes with it. And when you're preaching and it comes up, you know, there's no sin God can't forgive, not adultery, not name the favorite sins of your congregation, and put abortion in there. Suddenly, lights go on and people come up afterwards and say, Pastor, abortion? That could be forgiven, and now the door is open. But to find those ways to do it, You know, to have, if there's a support group in the community, if there's an outreach of faith-based outreach, have cards in the back of church, okay, where people can pick them up. And you just always put out, there's some good books out there, by the way, that they could put out, but you put a little note with it that says it's for their friends. Because if it's for them, they won't pick it up. Well, it's just a protection, you know. Oh, okay. Oh, I could take that. Yeah, okay. No one will know. But that way to come at it, and we have to understand also that in terms of when I can process this, we don't understand enough about the human brain. And from 11 to 19, the brain is rewiring itself. The prefrontal cortex, the logical part of the brain, isn't turned on and working right. If I get pregnant, I'm operating out of the fear center of my brain. This is awful. This is going to kill me. I will have an abortion. This isn't a rational thought process. And I really can't process the grief until I'm about 25, because the corpus callosum, which is the link between the right brain and the left brain, doesn't come online until then. And for years, I used to get phone calls from women. They would be 25 or older. The abortion could have been yesterday or it could have been 10 years ago. And I couldn't figure out what this 25 thing was. I mean, it was so strange. And then as I started doing, you know, reading about brain research, I'm like, oh, when she turns 25, that part of the brain's working. Now she can process trauma.
The title of your address at the Lake County Right to Life Banquet is What We Didn't Know, Understanding Our Biology and Wounds. What's the link between the aftermath of abortion and biology?
Well, there's a lot of them. but one of them is this question of carrying the cells. If I ask the women standing out here in this lobby with us now, did you know that you carried cells from your children the rest of your life? Do you know what they would say? No, I've never heard that. If I said, did you know you carry your mother's cells and your older sibling cells? They'd say, no, I've never heard that. This question of the biology. When I start a pregnancy, my first pregnancy, there are four changes of breast tissue that happen. When an abortion happens, it stops it at a level where the breast tissue is changing and growing, but it hasn't matured. That's why there's a link to breast cancer, because now if there's a carcinogenic something in my life, that's a weak spot in my body. If I have damage to the uterus during the procedure, I may never be able to carry a baby. If I had an STD, many clinics don't check for that. It may spread up into the fallopian tubes. Now I may have a fertility issue. And that's just some of it, okay? There's so much of the science of bonding that's there in terms of our connection to the men in our life. We women absorb seminal fluid for 15 hours after an act of unprotected intimacy. Why is that a big deal? Because seminal fluid is one of the richest fluids in the human body, and we absorb that. That's, when you think about that, that's got interesting potential. With one partner, as we're called to in Scripture, versus where our society has gone, which is it's hookup sex. No, doesn't matter. No, it does matter. And it matters to men as well, because men are changed by intimacy. They're hardwired to make these connections. And again, we pretend we're disembodied, or we believe we're disembodied. Whatever I think in my brain, that's how it's going to work. So I can have sex with lots of people and it won't make any difference. Wrong. There's a bond established with every one of them.
Well, your message is one that needs to be heard, but obviously the media by and large ignores that message. Yeah. But I've seen some TV shows here and there where they're kind of saying, hey, this is a human life.
Well, you know, Monty, also you see the young adults that go to the March for Life. It's a young people's march now. Years ago, you know, when we started doing pro-life stuff, it was an older people's, you know, an older person's march. But the young people are understanding something intuitively, I don't know, religiously, philosophically, that this is a life. And I think that one of the issues is we can see it. You know, we've done the movies, and it really started with The Silent Scream that Bernie Nathanson did long, long ago. But being able to see ultrasounds of babies and see that's clearly a child in there. That's not a clump of cells. It's not a puppy. That's a baby. Makes a difference here. And to know that a lot of the crisis pregnancy centers now have ultrasound machines that have been purchased for them by, you know, groups in the community, so that that woman can see that that's a child. That's her child. Heartbeat, face, it changes it, because it's no longer this anonymous blob of something, and I'm relying on you to tell me it's an anonymous blob.
Well, here in Illinois, the legislature, anti-baby lawmakers, have passed legislation that will expand taxpayer funding of abortions.
Yeah.
It's House Bill 40. From your point of view, this is a path we don't want to go along.
Yeah, and you know, I think the hard part in our society today is that whenever we try to speak the truth, we're accused of hate speech, of being uncompassionate, pick the language. So it becomes harder for us to speak the truth, but we have to be advocates. We have to find women who share their stories about what happened to them in an abortion. And we need to be empowering people to have the courage to support groups that support life, to help have places for women to go to stay, if you know, crisis pregnancy or maternity homes. We have to be proactive in terms of this. And I think we have to speak to our legislators with the truth that we know about this, okay? Not just to throw up our hands in despair and say, oh, you know, but rather to talk to them directly. What, you know, 1 in 3 women have had an abortion. We all know somebody, Monty. Whether we know who they are or not, we know. And so do they. And to be able to say, you know, we have to speak the truth about what this does to women is very important.
Vicki Thorne with Project Rachel, why are you connecting with Lake County Right to Life?
Because they invited me. Well, but it also is a belief that we're going to have a lot of people here tonight, Monty, who think alike. They're here for a reason. They didn't just wander in off the street, okay? To be able to share with them some things that they might not know, and that hopefully will empower them not only to be involved in the legislative process, you know, to have their voices be heard, but to have them be involved in direct action in their congregation. They can go to their pastor and say, hey, I got these cards, you know, for a post-abortion ministry. Could we put them somewhere? To encourage the pastors to talk to couples getting married about the fact that there are things that could interfere with your intimacy, one being abuse, two being abortion, because only 30% of couples survive after an abortion. So there are many couples getting married. He has his abortions, she has hers, and they don't talk about it. And that relationship is doomed if they don't share that pain that's in their heart. And the other one is, okay, now we had an abortion together, we stayed together, but we never talk about it. And that will lead you to abortion too. If you don't talk about it and actively forgive each other, I mean, there's a way to heal this, but to actively forgive each other, it eats at both of you. What if she gets pregnant and she has an abortion, she chooses it and she doesn't talk to me about it, or vice versa? What if I get pregnant and he forces me to have an abortion like before, or whatever the story is? We need to help couples to really communicate and to heal this loss. If it's a couple that shared an abortion, this is their child, and they need to mourn for that child.
Vicki, how can people connect with you and your ministry?
Oh, that's a good question, too. People can call our office. It's 1-800-5-WE-CARE. We're in Milwaukee. Again, 1-800-5-WE-CARE. We have a website, and it's, people need to listen carefully. It's NOPARH, National Office Post-Abortion Reconciliation Healing .org. And they can find us there. There's a link in terms of a email that they can use.
Ms. Thorne, thank you so much. Thank you for fighting for life and fighting for women.
Thank you for what you do.
Thanks again to Vicki Thorne for her insights. A reminder, you can contact Project Rachel at 1-800-5-WE-CARE. That's 1-800-593-2273. The website is NOPARH.org. We want to thank Lake County Right to Life for making Ms. Thorne available for Illinois Family Spotlight. Thanks again for joining us. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Illinois Family Spotlight. For more information, please visit us at ifiaction.org and look for us on Facebook and Twitter. If you would like to email us questions or comments, please do so at feedback@ifiaction.org Until next time, stay engaged and keep your eyes on the prize.